Session number 28688, Reel 1.
So you mentioned the first day, you know, your father gave you a lift down to the Gordon Barracks. And did he wait with you till you got into the barracks, or did he just leave you?
Well, I wanted him to leave, just because I just wanted to be with the other guys, as it were, at the time. And their fathers were by there, and if they were, I never saw them. And I said, okay, Dad, I'm fine now. You can go now, sort of thing. It'll be fine. And so it was fine, and I was just in with the rest of them. And then, of course, when we got over, we weren't taken back into the barrack room that we were to sleep in. And we all had, what do you do with this, what's this for, sort of thing, and was trying to sort of, you had a locker, and we stashed everything away into a locker, and it wasn't very warm in that village either. Remember one chap used to sleep with his tie on because he said it was warmer.
So, when you first arrived there, and you've mentioned that the other men were there, were they all the same age as you, or were there different ages?
No, mostly about my age. We were all young guys, mostly. We've got things like you had to go and get your hair cut, and then someone was sent back to get cut again, as it were. And then generally we had medicals, and it just seemed to be that we all did the same thing. We were just like a little coffee of ducks or something. We all followed each other in to do what we had to go through, as it were. Mm-hmm. And then we went and got messed in, and we went and had our lunch. And I don't think we did actually very much except sort ourselves out the first day.
Okay.
And then, of course, we had a sergeant who introduced them to himself and put the fear of death into most of us in about 10 minutes flat.
Okay, so the men that you met on that first day, how would you describe them? Were you all of a similar type, or
no? There were guys from Dundee, and there was a lot of guys from Glasgow, and they were kind of sounded tougher than we country yokels were from up here, but were okay guys. On their own, they were great guys. It's when there was a few of them got together, they could get a bit. Well, not so easy. Let's put it that way. I remember there was one wee guy, after he got on his uniform, he hung a thing around his neck like a wire, and it was one of these band saws for cutting things out, and he just had this thing around his neck, and he used to use it to defend himself. He was a little guy. Then anyway, there was that thing in me. I mean, it was a horrible little thing. When you put it on your hand and pulled, it cut like fury. So I think I managed to get him to dispose of that. It's not a good thing to be around. If I'm with a pal around with you, I don't want to be involved in that sort of stuff. But okay, guys. They were fine. And we all sort of eyed each other up and wondered, sort of, is he going to be all right, sort of thing.
And you mentioned haircuts. Were you sent out to a barber, or was this
the army? No, that was an army haircut.
Mm-hmm. And did you get a haircut?
No, I think so.
Was it really short? Or?
Well, I thought it was short when I went in, because I'd heard you didn't have a short hair thing, but we wore our hair short in those days. There was no long haired guys around then. No, we were all sort of tidied up, as it were.
And did you take clothes in with you, or did you know that you were...
Well, just what I wore. Mm-hmm. I just went in with what I was wearing, that sort of thing. Then we just got to shoot with this kit for that, you know.
Do you remember the kit that you were issued with?
I don't remember the drawers. We had long kind of drawers that come half down to your knees, sort of things. We had bricks that roughly fitted, but you wore putties and boots, you see, so if they were a bit alongside, it didn't matter, you could fold them over, and we had boots, of course, and they had to be polished and cleaned, and we were told that very early on, and you had to hit a spoon, and you had to heat the spoon, and you rubbed the toe cap of the boot until it was kind of smooth, and then you spat on it and knock it with your finger until you could really see your face in it. And of course, we all kind of took a bit of pride in what we looked like. And then we could have said, of course, with kilts and spats and all that. By the time you got all that fitted on, it was the day had gone, as it were. So we didn't get it all in one day anyway. And then we sort of, there was one or two guys, of course, didn't like it much, and one chap, he decided that he would be a bedwetter and he would be put out of the army. And I don't know if he eventually got put out of the army, but he spent a lot of time in the cells. But early on, I decided it was better to go with it rather than bucket it, you know what I mean? Was going to be the, and 99% of them went down that road as well. So.
Okay. So, you have mentioned here that you got some of your kit on the first day.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think you would have got most of your kit on the first day, or do you think maybe your kilt would have been
later? Kilt would have been later.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And your putties, you mentioned putties.
Right.
Can you describe?
Well, they weren't the putties, they were leather, little leather things. They weren't the putties, you know, the bandit type putties, they were leather little putties.
Okay.
We call them putties, maybe they weren't the putties. They were short little leather things that you wore on top of your boots, you know, and your trousers were inside.
Okay. And on your first day as well, at what point did you get shown your accommodation? Was it early on or later on? Or?
I think we were kind of fairly early on, and then we'd only sort of, this is it, this is a hut you're in. And then we went to get the stores to get our kit, and we come back and selected a bed. Some folk wanted that kind of bed, some folk wanted this bed. You know, at the end of the room or the middle of the room. I didn't really mind much what bed it was. It was I remember I think like it was about the middle somewhere, and we're looking at that.
Was that a large room?
What would it be? Maybe 15. 18 men in it, maybe. With two sides, beds up two sides, and an open in the middle, you know. Like a hut. But it wasn't a Romney hut, it was a hut, you know what I mean. A V-shaped roof rather than a rounded roof.
Was this like a permanent structure?
Oh yeah, semi-permanent structure. I mean, it was wood. Rather than corrugated iron like some of these Romney huts were. It was fine, just like a big dormitory.
Okay, and was there anything in the middle of the room?
No.
No.
Stoves. There were stoves, you know, pot-bellied stoves, which put out a certain amount of heat, but it was not a lot of heat.
Okay, and it was early in 1952, you said?
Mm-hmm. February.
So was it quite cold at that time?
Yes, it was. Mm-hmm. Quite cold.
And was it your job or someone's job to keep these stoves heated or on the go?
There was plenty of folk volunteering. They didn't even got something to stick in it. They couldn't get coal or whatever it was to put in it. There was plenty of people wanted to do that. And I can't remember ever being a shortage. I think the thing was usually lit most of the time. And there was just a cold water tap for washing and shaving. Yeah, we met, I think, and you stuck up, and there was a tap and a plaque along the top, and we just put the mirror up there and you shaved it in. It was cold water.
Okay, and was this at one end of the hut or something?
No, there was a bit for that. You went into the washroom places. There were latrines and everything there, and loos and washing there. That's how long ago, I forget, maybe. But that was basically what it was. It was just a trough, and the water ran out of the taps down there. And drain that way, and it was didn't seem to be too bad at the time. It would be awful now, I would expect, but there it was just accepted. That's how it was.
I was about to say to you, do you remember how you felt about being in this room?
I was very much, you're the same as everybody else, you know what I mean? It was there was nobody getting any hot water, if you like. It was all the same temperature of water, and so whether it was that tap or this tap, it didn't really matter. No, it was very much a case of, you know, you didn't want to fall behind, and you didn't want to be sort of too far in front either. You wanted to be in there, that sort of middle bit somewhere. At that time, anyway, it was. But I never came across anything. I mean, you hear an awful lot now about bullying in camps and things like that. I was never aware of that. Unless you call the sergeant Rora, and everybody was bullying, but I mean, there was never a single guy being a picked up with the other guys in the hut, if you know what I mean. It was, everybody seemed to get on fine.
And you've mentioned the issue of your clothing. What about the issue of your bedding? Was that in the room waiting for you, or was that was,
I think maybe on the beds there would have been three blankets sort of beautifully folded up at the end of the other bed. As I recall, the blankets were there on the beds when we came in.
And was there a certain way that you had to make up your
bed? Oh, yes. Oh, man, that's so much so. I mean, the mattress, for a start, was always doubled in half. And they had left your wire springs of the metal bed with the wire mesh, and your blankets were sitting on that. But then when you had a kit inspection, you folded up your thing, and your blankets had to be all laid out there, and your socks were on the top of that, and your spare boots at the side of the oven, and the kilts and all that. You know, you had to do it the right way. It was there was a method, as they said.
Okay. And who showed you how to do it the right way?
Oh, the sergeant. Or a lance corporal or a corporal, somebody, you know, a regular soldier would have been there in charge.
And did you find that easy?
How do you mean?
Well, you know, getting everything correct for this kit inspection, did you find that easy?
Yeah. I mean, it was just a case of how neat you were. If you wanted to put a bit more effort in there, it was fine. But if it wasn't, if you'd been sloppy with it, it depends on who would do the inspection. He might flick the socks off, and quite off. Coke the whole bed up me. It was a real mess. So, no, it was best to do what was asked, I would have said.
And did you always manage to get it right?
No, sure, I got fine wrong some of the times. It was like saying there was no point in trying to buck the system, if you know. You were better just getting stuck in there. And it was easy, it made life easier for you.
And if something had been wrong, what would have been the normal procedure? Was there some discipline?
Oh, yes. I mean, you would have been, depends on to what degree you had misbehaved, but if it was, I mean, some guys were stuck inside. There was a tent in there, sort of, and they were kind of cooler sort of place. But some of them got, one or two guys got, not at that time, but eventually some of them got so browned off with the thing, they really didn't mind whether they were stuck in there, you know. And but the other things was like peeling tatties or washing out latrines or some menial job was sort of mostly the kind of discipline that you got. And if you like peeling tatties, then that was fine. but you'd be far better sitting in the canteen chatting away to somebody than peeling spuds in the cooker.
And was it quite common to get discipline like that?
Oh, yeah. Well, they had to get somebody to peel a tatty, so they had to find somebody every day. But of course, they found him out had a whole lot. He didn't need all that many people to peel tatties. But that's how they got their tatties peeled.
Okay.
So, and somebody had to be lashed out with a PT kit on.
So, although that your room was, say, maybe 18 to 20 men, would there have been more men within the complex who had started at the same time as yourself?
Oh yeah, there was a lot of hurt. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the total intake was, but there would have, I don't know. But there would have been three or four huts anyway, with that kind of number in them. They'd all come in at the same time.
Okay. And do you remember how you felt the first night, you know, your first night in barracks? Did it feel strange to be in this room with these men, or do you think you accepted it okay?
No, I thought it was, I accepted it okay. No alternative, I realised that. It was, and you know, we'd had a busy day one way or another, and we were ready to sleep, sort of thing. And I could light, so I did it at 10 o'clock or something like that. And, but it was still all new, and I don't remember any particular feeling on the first night, other than it was quite pleased to be in my bed, as it were. That was about that I can recall anyway.
Okay. And what about army food? You know, especially in that first day, how did you find it?
Well, on the whole, the army food was just okay. I mean, it was plain food, but okay. When I was in Malaya, in A Company, we had a cook called Potter, and he was an excellent cook. We got superb food in the army. I would have reckoned that we probably had as good food as anything in the army had in Malaya. And because he was very good, he was full half the time, and he'd have got 8 cooks that lived in mortal terror of him. And because I was driving scout cars, we often would have hit a pig on the road or something, you know, and we stopped, and they're quite bloody heavy, these pigs, and pushed up onto the back of the engine, and there's a flatbed in the back of the scout cars that I fly. And we took this pig back to Potter. Sometimes at 2 in the morning, we got Potter up. He had to be ready to run because he was an angry guy, really good. But once he told me he'd got a pig, he was delighted, and he would hang it up and we would skin it and gut it and cut it up and stick it in an ice box. And then he always had an excuse. He needed to take it round to some of his other sergeant cook pals and some of the other company, which of course required a scout car. And he always got him home absolutely blown. But it was just a different scene.
The food at the Gordon Barracks, do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember it as nothing being awful and nothing being fantastic, as it were. Just food. The only thing I thought really bad food in the ship coming home, I thought I had got very wet potatoes, like a mash or whatever you call them. The cook says to me, that's not potatoes, that's cabbage. So that was the only time that I could say that I thought tatties was cabbage. But apart from that, food was normally okay.
Okay, so we've had our first day, we've got our haircut, we've got some of our kit, and you know, we've been to bed. Next morning?
Well, next morning we were all up at the crack of dawn sort of thing, and fall in, and then we marched and marched and marched and turned and marched and marched and marched, and it was amazing how eventually we became a unit, if you know what I mean. We became a platoon, and of course, if somebody was getting the wrong way, they do it again and again and again. So we were all sort of, Christ sake, get it right this night. it was very much, you can't learn fairly quickly. The sooner you learn, the better.
And had you marched before, or was this something new?
Well, I was in a scout, but I mean, I'd never marched like we marched there, sort of thing. And but it was good, it was fine, it was okay. Of course, it was like we had heels and our boots in those days, and we did make quite a noise. And then we did a lot of route marches and things, but mainly we marched in the square, up and down the square. But you weren't the only lot, was one. There might have been 10 different platoons all roaring and shouting at each other to get, you know, turn about, left, turn, right, turn. It was kind of like, I would think, like a sort of big family the platoon became, you know. It became a unit quite quickly.
And so did it take a short while for you to get into this marching? You know, did they get it quite quickly, or did you have to go over it several times?
Oh, several times. Mm-hmm. Several times, it was sort of about turning someone down to the road for a start, and it was there was a gradual moulding, if you like, of the unit, and of course, and then we had rifles, and that was a unique thing for us all, and I can't remember when I fired the first rifle. It must have been a few days after that, but we had to march to the Black Dog range, which was quite a bit. You'd have marched there, it would have been maybe an hour to get marching there, and then of course the targets come up and went down and up and down, and you bang, 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 and then you march back again. But then we did longer ones. And I think this is how I can only speak for myself, but I mean, I gradually got fitter, and it, you know, just because I was moving all the time. There was very little time for doing anything.
And do you remember which rifle you were?
303 rifles. Mm-hmm. Norma Enfield 303 rifle.
And had you handled a rifle before?
Yeah, I used to start shooting. I'm a shotgun. I had a 410 gun when I was a kid. I mean, I used to stock rabbits when I was about. Well, as I said, the war was on. Nobody bothered with us. I mean, and we ate rabbits in those days. Pheasant was a real treat, and there was no question of sporting shots. We crawled through the grass till it was near enough to make sure we got it. So, no, guns was okay. I was okay with guns.
So So when you were issued with your rifle in the first few days, do you think you had rifle practice at first in the Gordon Barracks, or do you think it was up at the Black Dog?
Oh, it would have been the Black Dog. We had to take the thing apart and clean it and put it together and take it apart and clean it and put it together. You know, we became very familiar with the rifle before we fired it.
And had you been accustomed to this with being on the farm, you know, like cleaning the rifle?
Mm-hmm. Cleaning guns, and, yeah. No, I was quite comfortable with guns. I mean, it wasn't a new thing to me, but it would have been a new thing for a lot of guys, I expect.
So were you able to help them with the cleaning?
Well, I mean, the big thing with when I was a kid, safety was the biggest thing that you had to be careful with. My father used to say there's been more people killed with unloaded guns than there was with loaded guns. Well, they thought they were unloaded, you know. So that was the thing that I used to say to people. Didn't bite that bloody thing. You know what I mean? It was, and there was people very sloppy with them. I mean, they waved the thing about all over the place. Remember one occasion, further along after we'd been in for a while, we had this sort of hand machine gun, like Tommy gun thing. That's a hand in the gun to you with the barrel pointed at you, you know, sort of. So it was, I was very conscious of the safety angle in the gun. I had been always, you know, so it wasn't, that was my biggest concern with other folks' guns was my worry.
And do you think the army as well installed in people the safety factor in the guns? Would they have told you how to handle, you know, to pass a gun, how to handle it correctly?
Oh, I'm sure they did. I can't remember actually somebody saying to me, well, a shotgun, you can break a shotgun. It opens half open and you can, always you hand a gun to somebody just to let them see that there's nothing in it. Well, with a rifle, you cannot break a rifle, but you can open the bolt to the bolt to the rifle, and it, if the bolt's open, you can't pull the trigger. It's you can pull the trigger if you like, but it won't do anything. And I can't actually remember people saying, you know, you hand a rifle with the bolt open. I can't remember that. So, but I'm sure they did. Otherwise, I had almost minus a leg or something, you know. And it was okay. The guns were okay.
Okay. So, and do you think you helped the other ones as well who weren't maybe so accustomed to the guns?
Well, I wouldn't have told them how to fire it, but I would have told them how to be safe with it. But I can't remember making an issue of that. But I would, if somebody had handed me a gun pointing at me, I would have likely said to them, you know, I would rather you pointed to the other road, as you were.
Okay. And so out at Black Dog on the rifle range, can you remember the targets that you had to go?
Yeah, I remember. We had to go up and do the targets ourselves sometimes. You know, we had to go and shove them up and down, and then you had a marker that you put up, if it was a bull or if it was off the bull or if it was high or low or where it was. It was an idea to get range. There was different ranges, you see. And I always remember they were told that at 600 yards, a man is the same size as the foresight in the rifle. I mean, he looked little looking through the hole, and he's about the same size. So that was like, gave you an idea how far away the thing you were firing at. But the targets was good. I mean, I liked it. I looked forward to going to the range. And so you did your better than you would have gone up into where the targets were. You were down in a hole, you see, and you shot them up above it. But the ground was that level. You were down here and you pushed the target up. Then you marked where he'd taken his shot. I mean, some of them actually shot the wrong target. And I don't know where a lot they went. There were a woman in the sand at the back of us, I suppose. But you could get 10 shots fired and hardly a hole in the target. Is this guy firing this target or someone else? No, it was fun. It was kind of fun. I think it was looked on as fun rather than, no, I'm being trained to kill somebody. I mean, I never actually thought about it as I'm being trained to kill somebody. It was just a case I was quite keen to hit the target, you know what I mean?
And was it live ammunition?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, latterly up at Fort George, we were put inside bunkers and they fired live ammunition inside it so you could use the bullets. But just to give us some idea what it was like under fire, I think they were allowed something 2% casualties or something like that, just to sort of comfort you a bit. certainly made you keep your head down, I can tell you that. Anyway.
So how often within your basic training would you have been up with the black dog?
Oh, quite a lot. We I can't remember how often, but twice a week, maybe. I mean, they were keen that we learned how to fire this thing. And then, of course, we got Bren gun, and there was guys detailed for the, which is a machine gun. And there's usually two people with, one to carry a gun and one to carry extra ammunition with, but he would have a rifle as well. But the machine gun was quite heavy. And then there was a chap, Clark, came from Mintler. He carried it all through Malaya, and he was a tall, thin lad. But he wouldn't give it up. I don't know what, he felt some comfort with it or something. He could certainly fire much faster than anything else. But we had a lot of firearm fighters.
Okay.
Basically, that would have been it. We would have been doing sort of assault course, keeping fit stuff, and getting arms training with the guns. Would have been our two basic main jobs.
And at this early stage as well, would you have been getting tuition in the Bren gun as well?
No.
No,
We got to fire it, but there was guys, but they came later, they actually were the Bren gunners, they carried the gun all the time.
Okay. And your rifle, once it was issued to you, did you have it all the time then?
Yeah, you cleaned it, you were responsible for it, and it was inspected more or less daily. You used to put your thumb inside above the magazine which held the cartridge down below, and the sergeant would look down the barrel and he would see the reflection off your nail to see. And the expression was, the bird has flown, but the nest is still there. They did like them clean.
Okay. And so did you get to keep your rifle by your side your bed at night or anything?
Well, I think we did.
And you also mentioned route marches.
Mm-hmm.
Can you describe to us, please, what a route march is?
Well, you would, the platoon would have been, from maybe the company, it would be three or four platoons, and you would have marched maybe 15 miles one way, and then you would have turned around and marched 15 miles back again. And I suppose it hardened your feet up, but a lot of the guys were quite sore feet at the time of their back. You know, blisters had been burst and things like that. Depends if your boots fit it well.
And with the route marches, would you have had on your full kit?
Aye. Well, they varied. Sometimes you went in kind of gem kit and ran, you know what I mean? And then you would have had a full kit march. And mostly kitted up.
Was your full kit quite heavy?
Yeah. Can't remember how heavy it was, but it was. You were fairly loaded up.
Part 3. We were speaking about your basic training, and you'd spoken about the rifle training,
yeah.
Route marches, and I was wondering about physical training. Did you get a lot of physical training?
Oh, yes. Sort of arms up and down, jumping up and down, running on the spot, and things like that. Basically, that's what our basic training was. Physical training, which was very good to keep us fit, and then marching was another thing. They wanted us to be a unit, as it were, and then arms training was a lot of that. I mean, arms drill, just standing with nothing in the rifle, just sloping arms, ordering arms, presenting arms, standing at ease, marching, picking it up again, laying it down, and you know, just to familiarise us, I think, with a weapon, to make it like another part of ourselves, as it were. And of course, always emphasising that it was vital that the thing was kept in excellent condition. So basically that was what filled our days. I mean, if we weren't marching, we were doing physical training, or we were doing rifle drill, or we were at the rifle range, and that was about the four main occupations that we did. And then of course we had dress parades, so we had end of the week sort of CO came and did an inspection. And